construction sounds. I think they're finally tearing down that old A-frame across the street. Well, that's good. Let's make a good backdrop to what we're doing today.
Grandpa, can I try reading?
Sure. You want to try reading? Yeah, I'll let you. Good idea. You're already doing a good job with your sound effects, aren't you? Here. All right. Here's a start right there.
What's this word? Mission.
Oh, that would be mission.
Oh, mission. Ready?
Whenever you are.
Set on his mission by Grandfather Mouse. Andy the... What's this?
Albino.
Andy the albino ran though?
Through.
Through the twisting maze. That excited the lair.
Exited the lair.
Oh, Grandpa, I think you better do it.
All right, then you can practice some other time. Here we go. Sent on his mission by Grandfather Mouse, Andy the albino ran through the twisting maze that exited the lair. Crossing the nave, entering the chink, he noticed the light filtering up it was all orange and pink. Dawn was coming on, which meant he and Grandfather had talked the whole night long. The spotlight sun was silhouetting an arabesque through the hedgerow branches. The rumbling noise was growing louder. But where was it coming from? Andy Mouse still couldn't tell. He left the balcony, turned right, and began ascending the tower again, climbing up, up, and up until he surmounted the highest parapet, then dropping down onto the tarred floor of the observation deck. He scurried along the wall to the corner and entered the open drain, which was where the water flowed down when the rains came. The dark tunnel ended abruptly at the light, just behind the gargoyle dragon's front teeth. Poised at the lip of the downspout, Andy Mouse, even now, still could not see what was making the noise, but he could tell better from what direction it was coming. Up Irving Street, still hidden by trees. The grind was growing louder all the time. Soon it would be forced to reveal itself. Pow!
Pow! Pow!
Andy, mistaking it for a gun, was about to run, but stopped himself,
pow,
saying,
pow.
No, I have to stay. I have to report back to Grandfather. Then the thing began showing itself. From this height, coming out from beneath the trees, it appeared to be the head of a gaudy red beetle with a snout of shiny enamel and a nose of chrome and wearing what appeared to be wraparound tinted sunglasses. Beneath those glasses, on the sides of its cheeks, was printed a message in yellow tattoo, and the message read, M. Mulligan and Crew. Under its shell, it appeared to be grinding its teeth, and reports were still issuing from underneath. Pow, pow. Again, Andy wanted to run, but he wouldn't let himself. He had to finish his scouting. Then he saw what the beetle was hauling on its flatbed backside. The mangled and broken remains of what appeared to be some kind of very large bird. A stork or a heron or a... what?
I don't know.
Oh, well, then keep listening. As the conveyance passed beneath him, Andy could see it had a sort of head. It had a sort of beak. But instead of normal feet, it had roller treads instead. Studying it further, Andy could make out other pieces. A backbone, two thighs, both girder size, and what might be considered tendons or wings. But with the improper misassemblage of things. It looked more like what you'd expect to find in a roadkill specimen on the side of the... Ah, then Andy realized.
I know what this is,
he said. He'd seen these kinds of processions before. There wasn't any danger. It was a funeral, of course. They were coming to bury this fowl.
Now I can report back to Grandfather and tell him there's nothing to worry about.
Armed with this knowledge, he turned to go. But just as he did, out of the corner of his eye, far down below, he spied, just this side of the hedgerow, an isolated, quick movement, the kind you might associate with a mouse moving through grass. Same flicker, same dash. Andy's spirits rose like a rocket ship's do on the soaring hope it might be his mom or his dad. He concentrated his attention on this area of half-shorn grass. Then a second rocket of hope ignited as a second mouse-sized animal emerged from beneath the hedge.
Oh, let it be so,
Andy pleadingly said. But alas, fast as his rocket ship rose, it crashed. For Andy then saw emerging from beneath the hedge a third animal stumble out. Definitely mouse-like in shape, but much bigger in size. Much, much bigger, and you know who I'm talking about.
Uncle
Bobo. Uncle Bobo.
It's a rat! It's a rat!
It's a rat!
It's a rat!
When the realization sunk in of who this had to be, Andy's hopes became like heavy stones tied around his heart and thrown down a well. Oh, well. Then suddenly he thought of his grandfather lying helpless below, and he took off running pell-mell to reach the lair before they did. Andy ran back up the downspout and climbed to the hatch and slipped beneath its cover. Then, dropping to the top step of the spiral staircase, he performed a speeded-up version of his previous pitter-plop, pitter-pitter-plop, 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 and so on. Arriving winded, out of breath, he discovered, much to his disgust and chagrin, that Fagin and the Artful Dodgers were already moved back in. Oh, I just remembered I forgot to put more tea water on. Be right back, Andy. Andy, you know who Fagin and Artful Dodger were?
No.
Those are two characters in a book I'll read you. Or you can read yourself. Called Oliver Twist. Fagin was what was called a fence or a receiver of stolen goods. And he ran a school that taught homeless boys, like the Artful Dodger, how to be pickpockets.
What are pickpockets?
What are pickpockets? Well, just what the word says. Pickpocket will swipe things from out of your pocket or out of a purse without your noticing.
And then what?
And then sell them or deliver them to the fence, to Fagin.
Things like what?
Well, wallets mostly, but back then it was also pocket watches and handkerchiefs.
Handkerchiefs?
You know, yeah, not like our common cotton ones today. These were expensive silk. They wore as fashion statements in Victorian times.
How did pickpockets pick pockets?
Pick pockets? Well, sometimes they bump into you and say, oh, excuse me, while they snatch your wallet. Other times they'll reach into a purse while someone in a crowd is distracted, say, watching a Punch and Judy puppet show. Okay, now. When Andy came down from the tower and burst in, the cousins barely looked up at him. Of course they ignored him. That was their standard mode for saying hello. Andy turned to go, but Uncle Bobo, suddenly rose up in his way and launched into an impromptu oratorio that rivaled the one Mark Antony gave the Romans in Rome. Ha! Friends, the Romans, countrymen, gentle cousins, ahem, lend me your ears. Come now. We come not to ignore our cousin Andy, but to praise him. Though we were denied any hand in raising him, yet we know this. He is an honorable lad. And we are gifted and gratified to see him appear safely in the doorway of his home. We were beginning to worry. Though, in fact, we've been anxiously awaiting. Though, Andy, I'm sorry to report you don't seem to be very happy. You'll seem miserable. Why is that? Oh, of course, don't bother to explain. It's understandable, given your plight. What a sight you are. Who can blame you? The mistake they made was in probably even bothering to name you. What caused this curse you have that won't rub off? Who can say? All we know is somewhere quality control sprang a leak, and nature's cruel nature gave birth to a freak. Who can say why it is? I wish I knew. I wish I did. And why should I even try when we already know Andy here is an honorable kid? And his albino skin makes absolutely no difference to us. We're not bothered in the least. We take his whiteness and put it behind us. And Cousin Andy, we want you to know, Zeke, Eke, and I meekly do, the three of us do, that we care about you as much as we've ever cared about anyone, freak or no. Andy again tried to go, but Uncle Bobo blocked his way. Oh, and one more thing to mention. Regarding that cat matter and our leaving early, clear up our faux paw, that it was never our intention to leave so hastily away, as it must have appeared we were doing that day. But you see, in fact, silly me, we skipped out because I suddenly remembered. I had carelessly forgotten that boys all had appointments in the city that very day, and we were already late. Long-standing previous engagements, impossible to break. And as I say, we were running late, so I thought it best to vacate the premises sooner rather than later. After all, you know, you can't allow the young'uns to shirk their appointments if they're made. Not if you expect them to grow up upstanding. So, I'm sure your grandfather, His Honour, will agree with... By the way, where is he? He's not in his room. Hmm? Andy, are you listening to me?
I'm listening.
I know you are. But Uncle Bobo's asking Andy because Andy is tuning him out. I say, nephew, are you listening? Andy was aware his uncle was still speaking by the continued flapping of his lips, but he had long since ceased trying to make his words make sense. After all, what was the use? When of rights what should have been an apology was coming out an excuse. But Uncle Bobo continued. Oh, and by the way, I was going to say, don't bother informing us about what happened with the cat. We already know about that. Zeke and Eke found out one day when they were lounging around in a grate downtown and happened to spy in the back window of a car going by the same cat hanging from a harness and with a splint for a front leg. From which conclusion we drew that, fortuitous for you, the cat was now nicknamed Stumpy, or something like that, and was no longer a menace to you and Grumpy. No, I mean you and your grandfather. we said to ourselves, boys, mightn't this be a good time to go look in on our relatives again, huh? Make sure they're all right? Well, as soon as I spoke it, I knew it was right. It just smacked of good deed, purest intent. On a nobler cause I've never been sent. By the way, as I say, where is the old gent? Disgusted, Andy finally pushed by and went to deliver his scouting report directly to Grandfather, whom he discovered had not been able to wait up for his return, but was now sleeping under the covers of confetti in Andy's room. Andy decided there was no need to wake him. The morning's crisis was now past. There would be plenty of time to inform him later that the apparent danger had only been a funeral procession. Besides, what hurry was there to deliver the really unwelcome news that the freeloading swallows had returned to Capistrano? And there's my water.
I'll get it.
No, you can't get it.
Sure I can.
You want to pour me my tea?
Yes, can I?
Well, have you done it?
No, but I've watched you. I'll be careful.
All right, you can. But I'll walk you through it.
Should I turn it off?
Yes, that knob turn there. Yeah, turn it counterclockwise. That's good. Good. You're going to need a stool.
Why? Can't I reach?
No, you're not tall enough. You're going to need the stepladder. Now, wait a minute. What is the most important thing you first have to do?
What?
Never reach across an open flame, Andy. So the first thing you're going to do is make sure there are no burners on. That includes the burner the tea kettle is on, as well as the one in front of it.
They're off. They're both off.
Good. Now, pick up the tea kettle only by its handle, huh? Everything else is burning hot.
The handle is hot.
That's considered warm, which tells you how hot the rest of it is, You can use a pot holder.
Where are they?
On the woodblock counter behind you. All right, now what are you
going
to do?
I'm going to pour.
You're too low.
I can't put it down. It's hot. I'll put it back on the stove.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
I wondered when that was going to dawn on you. Here, I should have told you. Bring the kettle here and set it on this trivet.
But it's wood.
That's all right. That's what it's for. Good.
Ouch.
Oh, Andy. Oh, hey, here, pick it up. Now set it down on the trivet.
Ouch.
Let me see your forearm.
Ow.
Oh, it's red, but I don't think it's going to blister.
Should I put some ice on it?
No. Just blow on it. Oh, boy, Andy. You okay?
Huh? I'm all right.
All right. I'm afraid that's going to smart for a while. Yeah. You did a good job, though. See, you should have climbed one more step so that your forearm wouldn't touch below the handle when you poured. But it's probably better you let the adults do this until you're older and taller. You keep blowing. I'll keep reading. Later that night, after those same freeloading swallows had swallowed wine and were roosting in their snores, Andy went back to check on his grandfather once more. and finding him still asleep, he took himself off to take another reconnaissance view from the dragon's mouth, to see if he could tell by moonlight where the giant mangled bird had been buried in the cemetery. Passing on to the balcony, he saw there was no moon glowing. A very dark night was showing. The only available light was that twinkling in the firmament, scarcely worth mention, though Orion overhead was doing jumping jacks, vying for attention. From the side of the balcony, Andy started his climb, going up and up and up, finally reaching the capstone block where he paused for a few seconds to perceive how quiet it was all around. The morning's great din, now a distant has-been. Then leaping down onto the black-tarred surface of the observation deck, Andy groped his way to the drain pipe and followed it down its slant to the opening up ahead, where, as he approaches, suddenly he freezes. He doesn't move a muscle. He's turned stone, for all at once he realizes that outside the opening, another's eye is peering back at him. What he had mistaken for the full moon blocking the sky was actually a hard-boiled, egg-whited eye, three times as wide as a pizza pie, belonging to that gigantic stork, last seen being hauled in pieces up Hurricane Hill. This roadkill specimen had turned into a phoenix, and now, in a manner wholly unexpected, stood fully erected, eyeball to drainpipe with Andy. Under the dim starlight, it presented the kind of frightening apparition a mouse normally only dreams about in nightmares. Yet there it was, standing right there. So close to where he was, Andy could have jumped to its eye if he wanted to. Not that he wanted to. Andy's survival instincts had kicked in. He was remaining motionless as a mannequin. But the monster was also frozen, too. Had it seen him? Was it holding still and waiting for him to make the first move? Like a stork hunting a frog in a bog will do? Andy thought he knew what this stare-down was turning into. A holding still contest. Always a challenge for the chronically fidgety.
I can hold still.
I very much doubt it.
I can.
Oh, yeah? All right. Let's see. No. You're talking. No talking. No blinking. Perfectly still. Not jiggling your foot. You, young man, are always in motion. Yeah, I see. All right, now. You keep eating. We've got to start thinking about your bus. All the time that Andy was remaining immobile, he was asking himself, was this monster real or a fake? Asleep or awake? If awake, why wasn't it moving? If asleep, did these monsters sleep with their eyes open? Andy couldn't tell. He couldn't make the kind of inspection necessary to cast doubts on this nightmarish vision. Therefore, he was left with a big decision. Except for his rapid breathing and tremulous heartbeat, he had remained still as a bas-relief. Stiff as a Buckingham bird. For 15 long minutes he stood this way, enduring the slow tick, tick, tick of eternity's drip, drip, drip. But the monster was enduring it too, and maybe was better at it than Andy, who was starting to conclude that he might not win this contest. He began to wonder if he'd be the first to give in. He decided he would wiggle one ear. He did. Nothing happened. He wiggled two. Still nothing. He wiggled his eyebrows. His nose.
I can wiggle my ears.
The monster's reaction? One of total repose. Oh, yeah, well, let's see. Yeah, well, you are, but you're also wiggling your forehead and your eyebrows. You got to practice in the mirror so you can do just your ears. Then, if you're really good, you can do one ear at a time.
Can you do it?
Yes, but I'll show you later. I want to finish this chapter before your bus gets here. Finally, at the risk of everything, Andy slowly backed up the drainage pipe, and when he was sure he was out of sight, he quickly ran up the tunnel and climbed to the top of the battlement, where he could look back down on the creature and spy it, though not with the same eye to eye it. Carefully, he peeked over the parapet. Yes, it was still there yet, still holding its pose, this gigantic origami, this Tyrannosaurus rex of snowy egrets, standing right alongside the towering tower of the church, so close it was practically chummy, as if the two were posing for a commemorative photo. And yet, supposing this were a commemorative photo that the two were posing for, which begs the question, having now twice been mentioned, it takes on something of the dimension of a riddle worth debating. And the riddle is this. Suppose it were posing for some kind of commemorative photo, then what would the photo taking possibly be commemorating?
What?
Well, what it's saying is wait and see what's going to happen next week. Are you finished? Take your plate in. Your bus is late today.
No, I hear it.
Oh, yeah. So you're right. Your ears are better than mine, even if you can't wiggle them.
Look, Grandpa, I remembered my gym bag.
Ah, so you did.
Grandpa, can I give you a hug?
What? You want to give me a hug? Sure you can. Sure. Thank you, Andy. Oh, I'm not tired.
Bye.
Hey, that's my handkerchief.
Show Grandma my drum.
You rapscallion. Scoundrel. You reprobate. No, I'm not you.